This meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the council's website. Please also note that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulation 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet and blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the council's control. Welcome everybody for coming. Apologies, please. Is there something I forgot to read out?
No.
No? Good. Apologies.
I have no apologies, Chair.
Thank you. Minutes from previous meeting. Am I all right to sign these minutes from the previous meeting? Yep. Okay, disclosures of pecuniary and personal interest. Are there any?
I think the LCC wants to work with the Yes.
No declaration of party whip. Questions under scrutiny committee. Are there any questions submitted? No, thank you. Right, I shall welcome Suzanne Kinder and, sorry, Councillor Fryer. Yeah. To come to the table, please. We're going to have an update on the panel, this performance scrutiny panel, and the corporate involvement and policy officer will provide a verbal update. So that's you, Suzanne.
It is indeed. Wow. So we're going to do a little a dual update, actually. But just to provide you with the background, we come here annually to provide an update to this group with regards to the current position of the Performance Scrutiny Panel. And I think it's fair to say that the panel has undergone some changes in recent months, and it's now a lot more focused and a lot more timely in its approach. So the work plan is a lot more streamlined than what it was 12 months ago. There's been a lot of work with officers, hasn't there, in terms of creating more effective timescales to create more current reporting rather than being behind timescales as was previously. This has enabled more detailed and purposeful scrutiny and really creates an opportunity for the panel to focus on the why, what and when with regards to their scrutiny. In terms of some of the key elements which the panel have discussed over the past 12 months, there's the usual corporate performance reports, capital plan amendment reports and revenue monitoring reports, in addition to elements such as council tax and housing rent arrears, housing repairs complaints, the climate local action plan, supporting Leicestershire families, empty home strategy, the online customer service programme, to name but a few of the programmes. There have been some additions to the work programme of late, which include the zero waste strategy, actions and monitoring actions against the housing strategy action plan, and also Charnwood Lottery, which is due to be issued to the meeting of the 19th of February. So at this point, I'm going to pass over to Councillor Fryer, who's going to give you a bit of an update about 17-18 annual performance.
Yes, the 17-18 annual performance is in the process. It will be being written now, and we'll come to the Scrutiny Management Board on the 8th of August, and will be presented to policy scrutiny alongside the Quarter 1 report at its meeting on the 21st of August. Now, our last meeting, we are not able to go through in detail with you the quarter four performance, which we would have liked to, and the annual, which is the end of the year reporting and monitoring. Our last performance scrutiny panel on the 19th of June was in Corrit, so we had to defer it. So this was very disappointing. It's one of the first times in my 15-16 years on this council that I've had to be at a meeting that had to be deferred through being in Corrit. We are now holding another meeting on the 23rd of July, which will be exactly the same agenda as the one that was deferred. Sadly, this goes against what Suzanne had just told you about it being timely, getting tight reports, because we're now looking at quarter four months after it's finished. I have to say, and this is to everybody, I am really disappointed that we had to do this. And I would, I'm looking to see if what with the officers and with the leader is how this can be changed maybe after the constitution next year. We knew at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, we would be in Corrid, and there was nothing we could do about it until 6:30, 7 o'clock that night. So anyway, that's one thing we're looking at. The other thing we are looking at is the benchmarking against other authorities, but we're now playing catch up now, I'm afraid, and our next meeting, well, not the next meeting, but we've got two quick meetings. We've got one in July and one in August now, so that we can get caught up. And I'm really looking forward to the scrutiny workshop next Monday, because I think that will be vital for all concerned. And Suzanne will answer any questions if I can't.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Thank you very much for the present. Emma, yes, it is disappointing. I've only ever been at one other committee where it's in for it, and you can't sort of cancel it until the 11th hour. So I hope everybody has been chastised who needed to be. I'm no longer on that committee, so it wasn't me. That's good. And it's disappointing that you are playing catch-up, because it sounds as if you've done a lot of work.
We have.
Because we have acknowledged, especially on the waste, you know, you were reporting on something that you couldn't alter, and the time limits had gone anyway. So we look forward to your next...
When we come back to you
next year?
No, we come... Well, we've done an annual report.
Yeah.
But it also comes back...
No, so I think we tend to come here 6 months and then another 6 months, so twice a year.
So at the 8th of August, your SMB, would that be able to comment on the meeting that you plan to hold in July?
The meeting on the 23rd of July is to consider the quarter four performance report. The meeting on the 8th of August for Scrutiny Management Board is with regards to the annual report. So they're two separate reports. And then the performance panel will then have the annual report following Scrutiny Management Board on the 21st of August alongside quarter one.
Thank you very much. I've got a couple of questions for you. Richard Shepherd, please.
Thank you. Suzanne, you've listed a number of activities. Could you also tell us about some of the outcomes, things that have changed or whatever, as a result of the activities?
Well, I think you can answer it, because we can only talk about
In terms of the activities in the corporate performance report or within the performance panel work programme?
Well, among the things you listed, the activities, are there some examples you could give of things that have changed in terms of the outcomes or that have been confirmed as good things or bad things?
Personally, I can't comment on those particular work programmes because I didn't take those particular papers to performance panel. What I can do is look back at minutes and notes and then provide a pre-see and something to inform you of the outcomes based on past meetings.
Yeah. It just occurs to me that perhaps on an occasion like this, as well as an account of the activities, it's quite interesting also to have built in some of the outcomes as well, so we can see what's been achieved, really.
No problem.
Well, it might add a little bit more context to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, it shows the value of the work being done by us being told about the outcomes and the results, as well as the actual activity.
I mean, one of the key outcomes with regards to the corporate performance report has been the more timely and measurable element with regards to it. So hopefully we now, we're going to be reporting within an 8-week timescale, so members will be a lot more aware of what's going on in a shorter timescale to be able to scrutinise performance within the council.
Councillor Parton.
Thank you. So could you specify, please, some of these actual actions you've taken to... with officers to speed up the process?
Well, to speed up the process, what we did was, when I became chair, I had a meeting with the officers in Democratic Services and said, was there any reason why this couldn't be done, and could reports be got to us more timely, so that when we were looking at now we're looking at quarter, you know, at the end of the year, or when we have our meeting, we're looking at quarter three, rather than previously, they were quite often we would be sitting in quarter in our meeting and looking at quarter one, which is really quite out of date. And there was deemed that except in exceptional circumstances, it would not be difficult to get the report forward in a much more timely fashion within 6 to 8 weeks of the end of the quarter. Certain things, depending on certain subjects we may be looking at, we may be reliant on outside information that isn't readily available from other bodies or other organisations that feed into our performance, that are doing contracts with it or something like that. But we did agree that performance, you're looking at performance, and you want it as current as possible to make sure that any actions that needed to be taken, because we were looking back at things that were 6, 7, 8 months old at times. Well, okay. Possibly action has already been taken on that.
Mm.
What we wanted, and also it gives a sense, if this is why we come back to the whole reason for performance scrutiny, for any scrutiny panel, has got to be as much as update as possible.
Yeah.
Everything you're looking at must be as current as possible.
So just to add from an officer perspective, we had the process in place. It really was just a matter of streamlining the process. So we've perhaps taken out some additional meetings that perhaps weren't necessary to be able to cut down the timescales and enable that performance process to happen in a more streamlined fashion.
I mean, that's why we have the why, what, when. Three W's, why are we scrutinising it, when are we going to scrutinise it, and what are we hoping to get out of it?
Yeah.
We're not scrutinising just for the sake of scrutinising or ticking a box on a on a tick list, but the three W's we've come up with.
Oh, thank you.
Right, so are there any more questions? If not, all those in I'd like to thank Councillor Fryer and Suzanne for coming today. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
You are welcome to stay. I'm sure it would be
I'd love to, but
we do appreciate we do appreciate your kindness. And at least I don't know what you'd have done if it was tomorrow night.
No. It's that is true. It's true. Michael.
So just in terms of decision, Councillor Shepherd's suggestion about some information about outcomes as well as activities, did you want to do that retrospectively, i.e. for, in terms of this item, or did you want to suggest that perhaps something that could be done from now on?
I think it's something that could be done from now on, yes. It's all right with you, Richard?
Yes, I agree. I think it would be useful to touch that.
Yeah.
The last thing that said, I think, we wouldn't be touching on that. Telling us what's changed. Was she?
Yeah.
Right, so what question?
Yeah. The added volume as well, isn't it? So, having it scrutinised. Right, now I'd like to invite Claire Clark and Councillor Vardy to the table, please. And Richard, I understand you're just there for show. But we will give you a hard time if we want. Right, so we're discussing today the single local plan, and who would like to present the plan, please?
If it's okay, Chairman, I'll just do a short introduction, giving a sort of background picture. And then the more technical aspects I'll leave to Claire, perhaps Richard as well. So.
Thank you very much.
If that's okay with you.
Yes.
Thank you for inviting me on.
You're welcome.
As the group will be aware, Council adopted the local plan core strategy in 2015. Whilst we're working to deliver this plan, we're also working on a new single local plan, setting out the strategic and detailed policies to deliver the Council's vision for the borough over a longer period to 2036. The towards a local plan for Charnwood consultation introduced and sought views on the key issues and options for the local plan preparation process. It explored, for instance, the vision of the borough, the evidence available, the scale of the development needed, the land available, and broad development strategy options. As with the core strategy, the process of preparing the local plan will be evidence-led, and the opportunity was also taken to sort on a number of evidence-based studies which will be used to inform the preparation of the plan. For instance, to limits to development assessment, settlement hierarchy assessment, green wedge and areas of local separation assessment, and strategic housing land availability assessment. Lots of assessments there. So how we consulted? A consultation was undertaken in accordance with the Council's approved Statement of Community Involvement, which sets out how we will engage in the preparation of planning documents. It took place over a 6-week period, starting the 26th of April and ending on the 7th of June. A letter was sent to 1,338 organisations and individuals on the local plan consultation database, notifying them of the consultation, including statutory consultees, parish town councils, borough councillors, planning agents, landowners, developers, members and groups, etc. There's also a press release, it went out to everywhere. And of course the statutory website coverage. So what happens next? Well, the consultation is very important of the plan making process. We've been able to get feedback on the key issues and options, and before any decisions are made, the responses received will have been read by officers and published on the website. The consultation has confirmed the importance of ensuring infrastructure can support development, delivering a sustainable pattern of development, safeguarding the separation of villages, and meeting the full range of housing needs. Officers will now use the consultation outcomes to inform the next steps, which will involve refining the options and testing these through transport modelling and sustainability appraisal process. This will ensure the key issues raised are understood before a preferred strategy is identified later this year for further consultation. Detailed comments on individual evidence-based studies will also be used to update the assessments before they are finalised, and comments on the vision and potential policy areas will be in use to inform the process of the drafting the local plan. So that's in a nutshell where we are, Chairman, and there's no technical responses which I'll ask Claire to comment on now.
Thank you, Councillor Vardy.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Councillor Vardy. We had in total 104 responses from the consultation from a range of respondents. You'll see on page 3 there's a count against the different groups. Perhaps unsurprisingly, majority or the largest group was planning agents and developers, but also a number of responses from members of the public. We received responses from a number of infrastructure providers and statutory organisations, including the clinical commissioning groups, Highways England, Leicestershire County Council, the Environment Agency, Sport England, Natural England. And the overriding comment really from all of them was around infrastructure capacity and ensuring that we have the right evidence in place as we move forward. We received responses primarily from members of the public raising concerns about the need and the capacity for housing in the borough. In particular, concerns were raised around traffic, infrastructure provision, impact on agricultural land, ecology, heritage, air quality, flooding, character and separation of villages. Concerns were also raised about the scale of development that was being looked at. On the other hand, we received responses primarily from those promoting development in the borough, suggesting that the larger scale of development that we proposed was the right way to go, or even potentially a higher figure. There was comments around the need for us to take account the standard methodology that's coming out of the new National Planning Policy Framework, and a call for a variety of sites and a variety of locations for the development industry. We had questions raised in relation to the relationship between the local plan and strategic growth plan for Leicestershire. some questioning why we were aligning ourselves to a plan that's not adopted yet and isn't statutory, others suggesting we haven't mentioned enough about this and we weren't referring to it enough, so opposing views on that. We received responses from a number of our neighbouring authorities, all of which were welcoming ongoing engagement through the Duke's Cooperate. The response from Leicester City Council highlighted obviously their concerns about unmet need within the city for housing and employment, but also about cross-boundary working on infrastructure where we're looking at development near the edge of the city. And Leicester County Council provided detailed responses on a number of areas of interest of theirs. I think it's fair to say overall there was support for the areas of local separation and green wedge approach and the evidence that we've gathered on that, and also on the sentiment hierarchy. We had a small number of detailed comments on the limits to development and a call for the local plan to provide numbers, housing numbers for neighbourhood planning, which is a key responsibility that may come out of the new National Planning Policy Framework. We received, as we often do during these consultations, a number of promotional documents on individual sites provided by developers and landowners. They took the opportunity to provide extra information to us about their sites. And the issue of student accommodation came up in a number of responses. Again, a range of views, some suggesting that we've got too many houses in multiple occupation and purpose-built accommodation that really we should be looking at on campus provision, others suggesting that we should be removing all restrictions and allowing more houses in multiple occupation. So a range of views. And then lastly, we had a number of organisations responding, including the Forestry Commission, the Canal River Trust, National Farmers Union, the Leicester Local Access Group, the Airport, Education and Skills Funding Agency and the Theatre Trust, all obviously coming at it from their various interests and providing really helpful comments that will help us form our policies that go into the local plan. And then at the end of the report on page 5 and onto page 6, there's a list of various topics that came up once or twice through responses.
Wow. Oh, that's what you look like. Thank you very much for that, Claire. Richard, did you want to?
No, Chair. I was going to do a very brief introduction just to make the group aware that Claire's actually been promoted to be the team leader of Local Plans and will be taking a leadership role on bringing Local Plan forward now and future, supporting myself and Dave Pendle. So you'll see more of Claire prompting these types of meetings. So I'm here really tonight to offer Claire some support at the start of her new contract and to make sure that, you know, that sort of segue is managed and that you're all aware of that scenario.
Well done, Claire. Thank you. Right. Before we start, I just want to ask two questions. The organisations, I would have found it helpful to have had the organisations separate from the individuals that were contacted. So in all, it was 1,338, which consists that was made up of organisations and individuals. I would have liked to have known how many organisations and how many individuals.
I'm sorry, Chairman, if you look at Appendix B.
Oh, right. Appendix I, so we've not, but this is done and dusted, so I would have liked it in my report then.
Wow. It's Appendix B, Chair.
So that's draft local plan. Yeah. Right.
Yes, I'll back that up, Chair, because you know, I was told to scrutinise the actual report, not the actual local plan, so I wouldn't have spotted it.
Page
6.
Organisations on that one. Organisations. Yeah, so that was the amount of organisations. Yeah? So right, I've got to count those then, have I?
That's the number. Those are all the organisations that responded to the consultation.
Yeah.
What we haven't provided is a breakdown of how many organisations we contacted compared to the number of individuals. That's something I'd have to
This just tells me the organisations you contacted. So
yeah. The ones that responded.
Responded. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not really. That's not what I was asking for. It was the organisations. As in there, it clearly says. You contacted organisations and individuals. I would like to know how many were organisations and how many were individuals. It might have been 5 individuals and 1,333 agencies. I don't know. So that's really just some information
to give a bit of balance to that. Is that I don't think that we're probably going forward. However, you know, we do. Put it out on the website as well.
I'm not questioning that.
We wouldn't be able to say how many people looked at that.
No, I do understand that, but that's the information I would have liked to receive from here. Thank you very much. And the question I would have liked to ask was need to explain, if you possibly can, I know you can, as you're a technical. It's on page 4, third paragraph down. Concerns were also raised about recent developments and about increasing the housing target to ensure delivery. Could you explain that? I mean, who would increase? Is it a concern that somebody just threw in there? Is it something that's happening? Is it something that we're thinking of happening? If it is it being considered? Or has it already been acted on?
Thank you, Chair. The concerns that were being raised around recent developments, some of them were general around, for instance, around the edge of Shepshed, concerns about the amount of development loading onto Tico Lane. So it was fairly specific comments that related to sites that are already happening in the borough and concerns that individuals had about those developments that are permitted and happening.
No,
the second element of the increased target, which I think is the more interesting one. So we, in the consultation document itself, we set out that we've got a housing need identified through the housing and development needs assessment, HEDNA, as it's known, which is across Leicester and Leicestershire, and that provides us with a housing need figure. And we've undertaken some evidence collection around delivery because it's becoming clear to us within the borough that we can identify the sites that are needed to meet that housing requirement or that housing need, but how quickly they deliver is a really important factor. Because if they're not going to deliver within the plan period, then they're not contributing to meeting that need quickly enough. So we were undertaking some delivery evidence to understand what we would need to actually find land for. So it wasn't a simple deduction of what do we need, what have we permitted, what have we got permitted, what's left, which is a sort of logical way through it. But to actually start to look at the sites we have permitted and we have got permitted, how many of those are going to deliver actually within the plan period, so by 2036. And how many of those homes are expected to happen after that period. So for instance, with the sustainable urban extensions, they will go beyond the period, go beyond 2036 and still be delivering homes. But those homes that are delivered won't contribute to meeting the need up to 36. They'll meet the need in the future, so they're still required, but it's not going to meet that need to 2036. So the delivery evidence gave us lots of information, and what we did through the consultation document was to proposed that there is sort of a low growth and a high growth scenario where we can either take a very strict view about what is required and run the risk that if things go wrong and things don't deliver as quickly as we hoped, that we might end up in a no 5-year supply situation. Or we could go for a higher growth scenario and build in more flexibility to give us more control. But obviously that means planning for more homes than we actually technically need. So that was one of the questions we posed through the consultation process. And so the response was, from many members of the public, why are you planning for more homes than you need? And then from the development industry was, you should be planning for at least the high growth scenario, if not more. to achieve what you need to achieve in the plan period, which you might expect, you know, from those interest areas.
I personally can understand that way of thinking. It's a little bit like my mum saying, I like that dress, how much was it? And I knocked £10 off it. You're putting £10,000 on it. But is there a risk there of developing more than we need and then explaining why we are building more than is required? Is there not a risk there?
I think it's a fair question. We would obviously do have a monitoring process, and the thing is to emphasise that we're at the beginning of the process. We're posing questions at this stage. We haven't come to any conclusion on it. And I suppose we were testing the extremes of the bare minimum and, you know, if we were really to protect ourselves and provide maximum flexibility, what would we do? And I think the answer is likely to be somewhere, sensibly, between those two points. And really what we need to do over the next year is to work out what that figure should be. And there are, through the plan process, we could take an approach of having sites that we've allocated and then having reserve sites. So it might be that we keep them, you know, in reserve if we need them, and if we don't, they won't come forward. And that's an approach that's been taken in the past. So we could take that type of approach. But all of that, as I say, is really up for discussion and you know, on the table for further thought.
As I say, I can understand that approach to sort of say here and no more. It's not good because you're not. Planning for the future then, are you? So, and that's what you have to do, plan for the future. Sorry, Councillor Harris.
Thank you, Chair. Page 4 refers to the lack of a national planning policy on landscape designation. So we don't have a nationally agreed definition of what a green wedge is or an area of local separation. And most people would think they knew what that was, but obviously it's a lot more complicated than that with the vast variety of situations or whatever. Is it possible to make a local definition as part of the plan? And would that have any clout when developers come forward to build on that particular area?
I mean, the green wedges and areas of local separation are established policies that we've been using in Charnwood for a number of years. They were in the Borough of Charnwood local plan and they're in the core strategy. And they do have established definitions of what each is. And one of the things that we were consulting on was a review of the green wedges that we have and the areas of local separation that we have against that definition to make sure that they were really performing against each part of that criteria, if you like, for what it should be. And we were consulting on the outcomes of that evidence and that will help inform the policies as we move forward. So and I think it's fair to say we've had success within Charnwood of explaining to inspectors what they are, the function of them and why we're trying to protect them. It's not always led to inspectors agreeing with us that we shouldn't see development there, but it often has, and that's something we're going to look to continue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ted, please.
Thank you. Obviously, you've narrowed down your next steps in terms of the responses confirming the importance of issues such as. Is this an exclusive list? Because it does say the issues such as insuring. So you've got 4. But so for example, just to pick 2 randomly in terms of the actual responses received. Let's take, for example, the one about student accommodation and then the one below regarding impact of development on ancient woodland and the Canadian River Trust. How would those two, for example, these are quite generic, so you could probably fit any of these into one of these 4. Were these 4 designed as a result of all of these?
That it's not a full list. It was purely designed to be a bit of a summary of the flavour of responses that we received, having sat and read all of them, all 104, what was coming out as a flavour. So no, it doesn't cover all the issues.
Yeah.
And to be fair, you know, the summary that I've provided in this report is still a summary. So then, but I would hope that anybody could read that summary and see their comments in there in some format. But obviously, we may have got, you know, 3 pages on why agricultural land should not be affected, and that's been summarised into a bullet point with loads of other things. So there's, you know, there is an element of you lose the detail as we go through.
Yes. And how possible? How much work would it take to create a chart that would show, for example, of the respondents, 5% mentioned HMOs, 25% mentioned quality of housing, so we could see what the general, in terms of a bar chart, what was the number?
Are you looking for a trend, Councillor?
Trends, exactly, yeah.
I should imagine those analyses have been done already to see if there is a trend. I think if you look in here, there might be something in the document that could tell you that.
One of the things that we were saying, planning, policy and planning, dealing with planning applications, that if somebody raises an issue once and nobody else mentions it, but it's a really good point, it will take just as much stock of that point once than if 10 people had said something that was also useful. We would give them equal weight in terms of how we're going to use them. So we don't tend to try and, you know, give weight to, well, so many people mentioned older people, so that's more important than younger people because nobody mentioned it. We would look at both. And actually, we would look at issues that aren't raised by the consultation responses as well. But it just gives us a flavour of what the public and what the development industry are thinking about, you know, the future for Charmouth.
And the third question is regarding responses received from Woodbrook Vale School.
Yeah.
Looking at the recipient list, that seems to be the only school that, I could be wrong, the only school that replied. How concerning is it that one school replied at highlighting capacity concerns? Would that indicate to you from your experience that the others aren't worried, or that they, you know, there was obviously a reason why they weren't engaged enough to reply, but Woodbrook Vale School were? I mean, they're in a geographical location, you know, that would quite reasonably highlight capacity concern, but I would have thought many other schools in Charmouth would.
You're absolutely right. We wouldn't rely on this as an indication of which schools have got capacity and which haven't. We work with the County Council to establish that. It's a really important issue. Same with doctor surgeries. We're working with the clinical commissioning groups to understand the bigger picture. They were, however, consulted, and the reason I think that Woodbrook Vale took the opportunity to come back to us is they had concerns about the change in the limits to development that was being proposed, which cut out their playing fields out of the limits for their area, and there was concern that if they wanted to expand, that might prevent them from expanding. And we've been talking to them about the fact that being outside the limits doesn't prevent it, it's just, you know, it's part of the planning balance that we would be making. But actually what we're trying to prevent is the spread of housing development. You know, primarily that's what we're looking at. So if the school did need to extend and it was outside the limits and the council was supportive of that, it wouldn't necessarily prevent it.
Mm. Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Shepherd.
May I ask two?
You may.
But at the same time, okay. It would be interesting to know, given that 26 individuals responded to this, how it compares with response rates to other consultations. Are there any lessons can be learned from that? That's my first question. And my second question is this. Obviously, the level the borough produces will have in the end to report with either the APBF or the advisor of EPA. So it would help me to understand and explain to the people the value of this consultation. If you could just distill it for me in a few sentences, what responses here add to officers' knowledge bank, given that they will have to respond to the APBF or new APBF? I'll make it clear, probably not. I mean, is the stuff here which is really worth knowing,
given that the NPPF is going to ultimately determine what you can recommend to members.
Yeah, I'm
sorry. So that sounds cynical. I'm trying to understand the value of this and be able, I hope, to recommend it for the people who are asking about it.
Absolutely. You know, consultations have a dual role of trying to take the opportunity to let people know where we are in the process and take them along with us.
Yes.
So it's not just about what we hear back, but it's about making sure that people know we're doing a local plan, these things are being looked at, and
yes.
if you've got anything to add, then this is the time to tell us. So the statement of consultation includes this consultation that we've just undertaken and another one that are additional to the regulations. And the reason for that is to try and create good community engagement before decisions are made. But I think it's fair to say until you start putting lines on maps and you start telling people what it is you're going to do, you don't always get the same level of engagement. I think once you started to tell people we're going to put this amount of development in this place, that's when people react. And that, you know, that's human nature, isn't it? That we react to what we see. But it's still important to us that we go through this process of engaging
yes.
people early. And actually, primarily for us, it's about talking to the infrastructure providers and making sure that they know what we're doing and we know what they're doing so we can work together as we go through this process. It's about drawing the development industry out. Tell us your sites, let us know where you've got land so we're not missing anything because we form our ideas. And it's about letting communities know about things like settlement hierarchy. You know, do you agree that we've got the settlement list right? Have we identified all the services in your village, in your town? Have we done that appropriately at this stage? Perhaps more than a reaction to the bigger issues. In terms of the NPPF, the National Planning Policy Framework, we have the draft of that. We have an idea of where that's going, and obviously we're keeping an eye on that, and we're, you know, planning with that in mind. And it is likely to change quite significantly in a number of areas that we're working on. So we're just mindful of that and wait to see the published version before we let it influence our policies, because obviously until it's published and it's in the public domain as the final view from government, it continues to be something that's being consulted on.
How do you compare the numbers made of the public with other consultations? With an unfair comparison to make, given, as you quite fairly said, individuals tend to respond more later in the process. I mean, have you any comparisons?
I haven't off the top of my head. I think the best comparison would probably go back to the same stage of the core strategy, so an issues and options consultation, which was around 2006. So I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but that would probably be the best place to look for that comparison.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Smith.
Yeah, just looking at your maps, page 37 and 39, are they supposed to be compatible? If you look at 37, so a Woodthorpe separation area. If you look at the same thing on 39, it's proposed for development.
Yeah, well, it's not proposed for development. These are sites that are being promoted or suggested to us for development. So it's sites that landowners, developers, agents have come to us and told us are available for development. But it's not to say that we would necessarily come to the view of the council that we want to develop them. And it might be that the fact that they fall within an area of local separation or a green wedge is a reason we don't. And those are the types of decisions we've got to make over the next...
So some of those yellow areas could be an area of local separation?
Yeah, absolutely they could, yeah.
Check, I just didn't quite understand the word. Did you say developers say are available? Or would like to be available?
Well, yes, they are available in terms of the landowner is willing
to see
them come forward
yeah.
for housing.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
I think that's the same as Appendix B from the beginning. It's, you know, people have, I've got a spare field, you can have 360 houses on it, they have no garden. So it's like that. I've got a plea and just an interesting observation in this, where this included, it's on page 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth paragraph down, and really this is to highlight the shall we, shan't we kind of aspect with planning. It's this included support for urban concentration principles as it maximises
existing infrastructure and minimises the need to travel, but also concern about focusing development to fewer areas and too few sites, putting too much pressure on existing infrastructure. And that's the fine balance between them, isn't it? And its impact on both counts, isn't it? And it's going for the least amount of problem. Now my plea is it single local plan or is it new local plan, please? Because you've got both in there. Can we stick to one or the other?
Publicly we're describing it as the new local plan, because I think that's how
it's
easy to understand what we're doing there.
But you have also got written in that single local plan, and that's just thrown me.
I think that's a hang up from the fact that we had intended next to do a part two plan to work with the core strategy, and then government policy has changed and moved back to single local plans.
Oh, okay.
So we've gone with that, and that's probably where that's come from, that language.
Okay, that's Councillor Jeremy.
Thank you. When you say you're keeping an eye on the figures, are you taking into consideration immigration, emigration and migration? Is that all being taken into account, 6 monthly, yearly?
Yes, the housing and economic development needs assessment that I referred to, Hedna, does all of that, looks all of that information. If the new national planning policy framework includes the standard methodology that's been proposed, that will be a figure that's updated every time household projections are updated. So it will be regularly looked at and reviewed, and then it gives you a 10-year number. So either way, either we will work with our neighbouring authorities to review the Hedna, or we'll get the standard methodology and that will be done as part of that process.
Thank you.
One more comment from me, please. It's on the last paragraph on page 6, it does say that officers will also be considering the implications of a new national planning policy framework. How will that be factored into our timetable?
It's something we're aware of and we know is coming. As officers, we've reviewed the drafts, so we know where things are moving, and obviously when the final one lands, most of it in theory should be familiar to us because we've seen it before. And then we would anticipate at this stage of the process that there might be changes that there should be less than we've seen through the process. So we're at the end of a process with government of seeing where the changes are coming in, and we've been planning for that as part of that timetable.
Councillor Vardy.
Yeah, just to add to that, thank you, is that of course this is all down to the MPPF, the new one. It's been drafted out, should be activated, if you like, action, they said in July this year, but of course that's down to the government timetable. And of course, we, as much as we try to, as Claire has said, we know what it says in the draft, and that's probably 99% what's going to be there at the end of the day. But we can't start taking any positive actions until actually it's enacted, and unless you've got an update on that, Richard, it just it's on the parliamentary timetable, and we all know that apparently there's something that's taking a lot of people's time up now.
I'm not going to die.
So, but as soon as we hear that that's going to be the case, I will ensure that that members are informed.
Okay, thank you very much. Right, is there any more further comments on this? No? Well, thank you very much, the three of you, for coming today.